Mr. Phelan, I'm looking at the stock market since President Reagan has been inaugurated. Stock prices seem to have gone down quite a bit. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I don't know. The market had a very nice rally all through last year, 1980, and into 81. And even under normal considerations, I think the market is always entitled to a correction now and then. And it's very difficult. Market tries to discount the future in some way, and it's hard to tell what it is discounting. Like everything else, we're sure it'll come to an end someday, and then everybody will be happy about it turning around.
Have President Reagan's economic policies been at all successful in terms of what you see on the market?
I don't think you can tell that. The president's economic program is just underway. And so it's going to take some time before.
Too early to tell.
Oh, sure. We certainly all hope, as I say in my speech today here, we're very bullish on America, and we're investing a lot of money in our market to upgrade our facilities to handle the volume that we're sure is going to come in the future. And so we think this is a good time to invest in the future, and we're doing so.
How soon will things turn around?
Don't know. But, you know, when you run any corporation, you've got to do long-range planning, and we think that in the next couple of years, the risk of not being able to take heavy volume is far greater than preparing for it. So we're making a significant investment in facilities and systems in order to be able to handle it.
What could make the stock market go up at this point?
Well, I hate the old trite old saying, more buyers than sellers, but I think that's right. We're in the business of running a market and making sure that we run the most efficient, cost-effective market. And fortunately, we've never been in the business of predicting which way it will go. The only thing that New York Stock Exchange and other exchanges do is to hope to handle the volume wherever it goes. And so that's it.
Is Wall Street upset from what you hear? You lunch with these people at the New York Stock Exchange. Is Wall Street upset by the administration's castigation of them for not going along and understanding what Main Street knows?
Well, I really couldn't speak for Wall Street, and we always kind of like to think that Wall Street is Main Street, and that the market itself is a reflection of the votes of thousands and thousands of investors, both individual and professional. I think that at any one particular point in time, market does a lot of things, and you have to take up a long-run picture and not take a look at the short-term outline. So, as I said, I think before to you, at the exchange, we are investing a lot of money in the future, both in facilities and systems. So we think that that there will be significant volume in the markets out in the months and years to come, and that our responsibility is to be able to handle that efficiently, cost-effectively, and capably, and that's what we're about doing. During that period of time, you'll get bull markets and bear markets, you'll get ups and downs, but certainly we are and always have been bullish on America and remain that way.
What are you gearing up for in the way of volume on the New York Stock Exchange in the next few years?
Well, we're gearing for peak volume of 150 million shares a day, sustained volume next year of about 70 to 80 million shares. On January 7th of this year, some people like to refer to it as the Granville Day, we did 93 million shares, but in the first 2 hours we were running at a level of about 140 million shares a day. So we think that the chances of achieving the volume levels that we are planning for are reasonably good.
Now, is this planning for these high volume days have to do with your belief that the economy will grow and prosper under the current economic plan? Would this have happened no matter who had been elected? Would you have had these plans?
Well, we think that there is an environment in this country that has changed, that there is a more of a switch towards a stress on savings rather than spending, on investing. We think that there are changes coming in many programs that will make it more advantageous for individuals to again begin to think of other than spending their discretionary dollars, and we think part of that money will continue to go into the stock markets in the future. And so we really think that if we don't prepare for it, well, we could always be wrong. The risk of our being wrong by not preparing are far greater than the risks of being ready for it if it comes.
So that when the administration says Wall Street's not going along, in fact, you are going along. You're investing and preparing for a future based on the plan of this administration?
Well, certainly the New York Stock Exchange is, yes. And I, I wouldn't be so presumptuous as to say we're Wall Street, but that part of it that we are, we certainly are investing and planning for the future and looking optimistically towards it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And then we'll get
returning to saving, as you suggested, is the money going to the savings and loans, savings accounts, or?
Well, I think I think that hopefully it's a trend that begins over a period of time. One of the problems with all of us is that we're used to instant coffee and instant tea, and these things don't happen in a couple of months after people have not been saving the discretionary income for 10 or 15 years. But we think that as a trend, it has probably changed, and that it will come where the investment opportunities are best for them. And if they're best in real estate or in savings banks or savings and loans or the stock market, we think that's where the money will go.
What does that say for the health of the economy amid talk lately that we're going into a recession again?
I don't think it has to do anything with that, because we're talking about now long-term trends and not short-term economic factors. Fortunately, I'm not an economist, and I don't have to predict the cause of the economy over the near term.
Stay right there for one second. You can leave your mic in there. I just need a little bit of setup with you talking to me.
Okay. And because financial situations never repeat themselves, even though the old adage of history says they do, the 20s did not come again. We were now ready with a strong, efficient industry and self-regulatory procedures that had been carefully built up from the ashes of the Great Depression 35 years ago. And in fact, during the paperwork crisis, the exchange and its membership committed a total of $140 million to protect public customers' accounts. But even as that machinery swung into action, public confidence in the industry was badly shaken. And it was hardly surprising that service clubs and civics groups were not very much interested in pep talks about the securities business during that period. But like the well-known incident of Mark Twain's obituary, the reports of the securities industry demise were greatly exaggerated. The industry survived and started taking a hard look at what had happened and why. Congress and the regulatory authorities also began looking for explanations, and everyone came to roughly the same general conclusions. Much of the securities industry had simply failed to keep up with the times. It had grown and expanded without adequately planning for the future, neglecting the crucial importance of managing its own growth. Most people in the industry agreed that it would have been brought kicking and screaming, if necessary, into the final third of the 20th century. The results over the past 15 years has been a self-modernization program, embracing a powerful commitment to technological excellence and innovation that has changed and revitalized the entire securities industry. These changes have helped build public confidence in the industry's integrity and its ability to efficiently support the essential capital raising and capital allocation process that fuel our national economic growth. Today the securities industry is stronger than ever, both operationally and financially. And that is crucially important as we find ourselves in the midst of a nationwide revival of the spirit of economic venturism, our traditional American penchant for taking reasonable financial risk when there is a prospect of gaining reasonable financial rewards. You don't have to be an economic historian to recognize how indispensable the willingness to take informed risks have been in building the strength and resilience of our American system of free enterprise capitalism. It would be impossible to overstress the importance of advanced communications and data processing technology in preparing the securities industry to play a leading role in our national economic renaissance. And among the most dramatic changes are those that have taken place in the New York Stock Exchange. People do not usually think of the New York Exchange as a proving ground for new ideas. They tend to forget or overlook the fact that it has had some rather distinguished history of technological innovation that stretches back more than a century. The exchange was, for example, among the first major organizations to recognize and exploit the commercial significance of the telephone. And of course, the early introduction of the first stock ticker, way back in 1867, paved the way for the modern transactions reporting techniques
that keep investors the world over instantaneously and accurately informed about the market. Much more recently, the exchange pioneered the concept of the automated securities depository that has eliminated most of the physical handling of stock certificates that once caused so many bottlenecks in the clearance and settlement of stock transactions. And even back in Keith Funston's time, the need to keep the world informed about what was happening in the market prompted the exchange to explore and develop complex data processing and retrieval systems that were remarkably sophisticated. One area in which the exchange might be said to have dragged its feet in the past was in the development of creative technological support for the trading process. But there were some very good reasons for that. To people outside the securities business, the idea of applying electronic technology to securities trading often conjured up exotic ways of feeding orders into a computer so that the completed trade came out neatly packaged at the other end. But most people today acknowledge that the execution process requires a great deal of reason and judgment that is not yet possible to automate. At the exchange, we believe that the exercise of good human judgment and responsibility for on-the-spot decision-making is crucial to maintaining the fair, orderly, continuous liquid markets that support the capital formation and allocation needs of our national economy. Superficially, computerized trading might seem to be a compelling idea. The problem is that no one has ever figured out how to program a computer to have the feel of the market and to react to the rapid-fire, often unprecedented, market developments with instincts of an experienced broker. I know I wouldn't want a computer making transactions for me on the basis of news reports from Iran or Libya or Detroit or wherever else events may be taking place without the benefit of human judgment as to the significance and the potential impact of those events. And I believe most investors would not either. The thrust of our recent activity at the exchange has been to try to perfect the art of what is both possible and desirable. Essentially, we have concentrated on maximizing the use of electronic technology up to and away from the point of sale, while preserving the all-important element of human expert judgment at the point of trade. And the changes occurring in these areas are among the most exciting things that have been happening today. To help achieve this, we are doubling and in many cases tripling the capacity of our computer systems. We have begun substantially to increase the capacity of our small order handling systems, with enhancements already being implemented. These systems will be able to handle up to significantly larger sizes than in the past, and therefore significantly larger numbers of orders. The present stock ticker operates at a fast speed in which the fastest speed at which the human eye and brain can perceive and understand moving characters. Moreover, high-speed electronic communications lines assure that various commercial interrogation devices can provide essentially up-to-the-minute market data on a real-time basis, so that even when the tape is late, you punk Jake, Bunker Raymore, or Crotron, you will get the last sale in IBM as though you were standing there on the floor, and there is no delay in any of those interrogation devices. However, we are looking into new ways of speeding up the ticker, perhaps bunching sales at an existing price during times of high volume. We are also exploring the feasibility and the variety of sophisticated new devices that might further improve the speed, efficiency, and cost effectiveness of the trading floor operation. One of these is a handheld computer terminal, somewhat resembling a personal calculator, and that could be used by either reporter or the broker to record the details of trades and feed them into the tape or either to their own computer system. We are also looking into the adaptability of touch-sensitive data display screens and other means of speeding the electronic retrieval of market into information. And we're also looking into the automation of the specialist book so that we can handle much higher volume in that area. In short, the exchange has staked out and intends to maintain a strong position in the vanguard of technological innovation in the U.S. securities industry. Moreover, since the exchange cannot operate in a self-contained, self-satisfied vacuum, we are offering special high-volume planning assistance to our member firms. And we are working closely with other segments of the industry to help assure that avoidable bottlenecks do not develop away from the exchange during the periods of active trading. Obviously, these ideas and procedures that most people have not readily associated with the New York Stock Exchange in the past. And they stem directly from our new approach to managing the exchange's business and serving the investing public as efficiently as possible in an increasingly competitive environment. As we look into the future, we believe that the recent tax legislation to encourage savings, risk-taking, investment, and job creation can, together with sound overall economic policies, add up to additional new competitive opportunities for the entire securities industry. At the exchange, we make a point of avoiding predictions. But others have suggested that the right policies and programs can trigger industry-wide volume increases of a magnitude far exceeding anything that we have been called upon to handle in the past. And all our current efforts are geared to making certain that we and the industry generally have all the necessary human and technological skills for that task. I noted earlier how the U.S. shareholder population blossomed during Keith Funston's Hold the Road to a Healthy, Productive Economy. As a nation, we have demonstrated that the resilience to survive a long period when the ideas of a fair return on investment became increasingly unfashionable. Today, more and more Americans, in factories, on farms, in corporate boardrooms, in academia, and even in government, are taking a fresh look at the ideas and values that used to propel the U.S. economy and society forward and upward. There are signs that we are beginning to remember what we were able to accomplish in the past and how we did it. Unprecedented market activity and resurgence of public share ownership are just two such signs, and there are many others. There is a growing determination to rely less on the government and more on ourselves. We may not have all the answers yet. We have finally begun to pay closer attention to the importance of sound fiscal and monetary policy. We are looking at business and tax investment policy with less jaundiced eyes. We are rehabilitating the idea of informed financial risk-taking as an honorable activity for honorable men and women. We are even daring to admit that we needn't be ashamed to have a healthy appreciation for honest profits honestly gained. All of these signs are good cause for optimism. Someone once described capitalism as a blend of economic hopes and promises that investment and hard work translate into economic fulfillment on a national scale. The job now for the private sector is to help the government translate rising optimism into action. Where does the New York Stock Exchange fit in this picture? The exchange is internationally acknowledged to be the focal point of the capital market systems that fuel the economic growth of American business to the ultimate economic benefit of all Americans. And the exchange takes its central role in this nation's capital raising process very, very seriously. Our basic function is to provide an efficient, continuous, secondary market that assures investors' assets a high degree of liquidity. The exchange above all else, the marketplace where investors know they can buy and sell shares of America's leading corporations quickly and easily at any time after the initial distribution of those shares in the primary market by the issuing corporations and their underwriters. We believe that to fulfill this role, the exchange must maintain, develop, and constantly strive to improve and strengthen the quality of a full range of services our market offers the investing public through the most dynamic and effective possible blend of people and technology. And that objective is uppermost in our minds as we seek to resolve the many complex issues and challenges involved in creating the best possible public securities trading environment. At the New York Stock Exchange, we have learned the hard way to benefit from our experiences of the past. But most of all, we have learned that change is the mother of all of us. And to embrace her and to take sustenance from her is the road to tomorrow. And we at the New York Stock Exchange believe that this great country of ours has a magnificent future. And we look forward to filling our role in our destiny in the glorious days of this country that are yet to come. I thank you very much.
ahead.
All right. What we have is an event that's designed to show Chicago as an international city. As such, we've got displays from all of the continents. We have an Asian area with Asian food and music, African area with African food and African music, United States area with primarily devoted to the Wild West, and we got barbecued ribs and that kind of food there, and a European area too with displays from Spain and France and England and a wide range of European specialties.
Isn't this awfully big area even for 22,000 people?
I think we'll find it's just about enough room.
How big is the hall?
I don't know.
I had to ask you something you didn't know. So what are at the various areas besides food? Entertainment or what?
Yes, each of the areas is going to have entertainment that's typical of the area. We'll have, from the United States area, we'll have country western music, we'll have African music, very legitimate kinds of African music at the African area, and the same is true of each of them.
Why do something like this over the kinds of fundraisers the mayor's done before?
This thing, I think the mayor felt this time that rather than the big sit-down dinner, most of these events, they're like family gatherings. They offer everybody an opportunity and a rare opportunity to all get together in one big hall. So frequently you've found if you've had dinners, everybody's up from their table anyway. They're going from table to table saying hello to people that they know well and friends and people they just don't get a chance to see. So the thought was, well, this time let's just have it as a social affair, and that's what the mayor chose to do.
How much is it costing just for the setup?
I don't know the exact dollar amount. I don't think those dollars are pulled together. I believe it is about a half the cost of a sit-down dinner, however.
Can you compare it to, do you have a ballpark figure just so we can compare
it to? I would think it's in the range of, I understand that the dinner before was, it's a very festive affair. It's going to be a lot of music and a lot of just plain good socializing and not a lot of speechifying. I think it's going to be one of the better remembered events in a lot of years.
So you expect people just to kind of move from one area to another and taste all the different foods and...
Exactly. Taste a lot of food, see a lot of people, and have a real good time. And there's no heavy message in the evening.
Okay, my next question.
It's a great setup. It's a very international night. It reflects the makeup of the city.
Do you think this is some kind of commitment or more serious message from the mayor?
I think the mayor has always had a serious message. This is just another example of trying to bring people from all walks of life, from all ethnic groups and makeup to come here and get together and work for one city.
At $100 each.
Obviously, some people had to pay to come in here.
You did.
Ob- obviously some people had to pay to come in here. And we're having a wonderful time.
It's worth $100?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You think so?
I didn't pay.
I ask you, how do you like the setup here?
I'd rather... The setup here is all right.
You like it better than what they usually are?
For the amount of people, yes.
Do you like the international theme?
I haven't seen too much of it.
Hey there, I just want to ask you, what do you think of the setup here?
It's very nice. I think it's well done and very interesting with the different countries and everything else.
Is it worth $100?
Well, not really, but in some respects it is.
What do you mean?
Huh?
What do you mean by
it
that?
It depends on $100 is given for the organization and for Jane Burns. You know, in that respect, it is. For what is offered here, probably not.
Do you like it better this way than the usual sit-down dinner?
Not, I don't. That's a personal opinion. You know, I think it's too much related to the Chicago Fest idea and everything else that, you know, we are involved in. It's such that it's a little more casual in a way that's nice, and you don't have the... You know, the so-called format of the speeches and stuff, but I would rather sit down.
Okay. Thank you. I want to ask, are you having a good time?
Right now, yes.
What do you think of the setup?
I thought the setup was very interesting. You know, it took me a while to realize all the different little subtle aspects of it, but I think it's really nice.
Do you like it better than a sit-down dinner?
Very much so, yeah. This way you get to walk around and see a lot more people.
Do you think it's worth $100?
It was certainly worth $100 to me, yes.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Sure. What do you think of the setup here?
Well, it's an unusual type of cocktail party. It's the first one that I can recall ever being held in Chicago. And the way that the turnout is, I would say that this could easily establish itself as one of the largest political cocktail parties in the world.
You think it's something you might want to see followed again, either for the party or some of your own private fundraising?
Well, again, it's something that is unusual, and it's informal in nature, which gives people an opportunity to sort of circulate. And I think that's a good thing, because at most political affairs, when you have a sit-down dinner type of thing, it's a little more formal and it's a little more rigid. But here people can have an opportunity to circulate, and I think that's a wholesome thing, and I think it should be encouraged, because most of the people who come to political affairs, they support the candidate. This is done by virtue when they make the payment for the ticket. But again, for them to have an opportunity to socialize and come in contact with each other, I feel is a positive thing.
Okay, thank you very much. How impressed you were with the setup?
Well, very much impressed. I think it's a tribute to the mayor and a decent from the tribute to the mayor. It's a tribute to the city of Chicago. Yeah, and it's just a
unusual. Must be a very unusual. Popular woman. I've been in Ireland. I'm here on a trip. And
if this doesn't prove she's the greatest mayor in the United States, I don't know what will.
Amazing.
Really? It's amazing.
Really. Where are you from?
I'm from Ireland. I'm over on vacation. And you hear a lot about America, what it is, what it isn't. And you've heard a lot about Mayor Daley and, you know, and how great a man he was, and I'm sure he was. But this is a tribute to the mayor, this is more like the
wedding in London.
Thank you. Jay, Barbara. Hi. How are you? Nice to see you all. Thank you. Thank you.
Hi. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. Hi. Hi. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Thank you. I want to thank, from the very, very bottom of my heart, all of the Chicagoans who poured out to this tonight. It means so very, very much when you're working really hard to make this and keep this the greatest city in America. And I know that all of you share that thought with me. I know that because we've got a great city only because we have great people, and that's what all of you are here tonight. And I'm grateful and thank you very, very much. I also want to say, on behalf of Jay and myself, and Jay's right here, that we owe that's enough for Jay now, you know, all right? I want to say that when we asked Tom King if he would be the chairman this year, in a minute's notice, Tom King said, I'd love to. I love this city. I know it's a great city. And what I want to do, as well as bring people to a fundraiser, is get everybody back together again. And that's what Tom has worked on doing. We made the theme, the seven different continents, because that's what Chicago is made up of, representatives and descendants of people from all over the world. And I must say that Tom King and his wife, Barbara, who is also over here looking beautiful, and you may give her a hand, right? Worked very, very hard, and parties like this just don't happen. I think that the spirit right now in Chicago is beautiful. I think the spirit in this room is equally beautiful. I hope the food is good, and I'm sure the beverages are also good. We thought what a very big thing it would be if we could just get a room and get people mixing together like this. And Tom King and his committee, who worked so very, very hard, brought it all about. And they brought it all about, and I can't say to all of you, to the committee, to Tom, and to all of the people that worked to make this the largest cocktail party ever held in the United States. And it's because you're here, and it's the only way that I know of to say thank you very, very much. Thank you. 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 because we've worked a lot harder than you have. We've wandered from continent to continent to say thank you to everybody who came. And once again, I want to thank Tom King and the committee that worked so very, very hard to put this party together and to bring everybody together at this event. I see so many people out here that I want to recognize and say hello to. Right down below, I see Loretta Reardon, and I think everybody remembers our great first deputy superintendent, Reardon, who's right here. Over there, I see Governor Dan Walker, who's certainly looking forward to a big future. I see good friends from consumer sales. And all in all, I would say, Tom, you put a great party together. And I'm very grateful. I hope the spirit that's in this room is the spirit that stays throughout this city, and that working together, we will truly be, as the slogan says, the greatest international city, really, in the world. Please help me make it. And I want to tell you one other thing. Thank you, and I really love you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.